Hello, good morning. Mark cannot come today, and I will do the lecture for him. I'm sorry, it will be in English. Otherwise, it will be a mess. So at least you can understand something if I speak English. Anyway, the what is supposed to be covered today is just technical things that. I mean, not subtle concept, not difficult stuff that needs precise understanding of every word. So just formulate that you can follow with any problem. We will start doing a brief review. So the purpose of quantum field theory, well, the origin was to construct a theory which is a quantum theory preserving Lorentz invariants, right, all together. So there was a trial. First trial is Klein-Gordon equation. And Mark already spoke about that and showed that there were some problems. Then Dirac came and made his equation, no? Which is solved some of the problems, in particular some of the problems of the Klein-Gordon equation, in particular. The states with negative energy are correctly interpreted now, and there was a problem with the interpretation of probability density of the wave function, and also the issue with particles and antiparticles. Okay, that's precisely, I think, why Dirac got his Nobel Prize. Then, well, he wrote an equation that is very similar to what we have in the Schrödinger case. So the variation of the with the respect to the time of the spinner is can be written in this way with H, the Hamiltonian, and I think you understand this notation, right? This is there is an implicit sum here. Okay. This equation can be also written. The Dirac equation can be also written in this way. Or as you will see it in some books, using the slash notation introduced by Feynman. Where this means, I mean, yes, something. Okay, this are things that you already know, right? Now, with this equation, you have already seen there are two types of solutions: spinners with positive energy, and these they can be written. Like, in general, And then, well, the other. When now So this is the four spinors that solve the Dirac equation, right? So we have positive energy solutions and negative energy solutions that are interpreted as particles and antiparticles, right? okay, this is the stuff that you already know. Now, given that the Dirac equation is so promising, we're going to study it with a bit more of detail, no? So we will start looking at the spin of the spinors that are the solutions of the Dirac equation. So I don't know if Mark is following some kind of numeration or okay. In any case. So there are several arguments here. So first, the Dirac equation describes a free particle, and so it's a rotational invariant system. So we expect that the total angular momentum is conserved in this system. Okay. Then as we have been using Dirac, poly matrices to construct the gamma matrices, the alpha, beta, and, well, actually the gamma matrices, we also have a hint about the existence of solutions with two spins, right? This is also motivation to consider the Dirac matrix. The Dirac equation describes particles with spin. Then, one thing we expect that the orbital angular momentum is not a good quantum number. Why? Well, because we know from quantum mechanics that when we have a system with spin, what is conserved is the total angular momentum. And this can be confirmed. Let's explicitly check it. So we can compute, recall that the orbital angular momentum is this, and then we can compute the commutator of the Hamiltonian and the L, and this is and then we use this expression. Well, actually we know that partial is a derivative, right? So we can write Hamiltonian as okay. Then I expand the indices. Here I've used that. I mean the I component is and also the fact that, well, this I think you two things I have just here. So I think this is pretty obvious. Then, as this part commutes with beta m, we cancel this term. And then we get I epsilon I j k alpha l delta J L V K, and this is just alpha okay. So in general we see that this operator does not commute with the Hamiltonian that is in agreement with our expectation. Instead, as I said already, we are looking for an expression of the spin operator. So we look for something that added to the orbital angular momentum makes that Hamiltonian commute with J, so that J, any of the components and also the square of J is a good quantum number. This is what we're looking for. Now I have a problem. If I write here, you can you see it? I don't know if it's too low or. Okay. So I propose a candidate for the spin. Well, first, let me motivate. The angular momentum and the spin satisfy the angular momentum algebra, right? So this operator, the would be spin operator, will fulfill this type of algebra. But we know that the Pauli matrices satisfy it. We know that so I propose this operator. Well, not me, but I mean, in the books, you can find this expression with capital sigma equal to you understand this notation, right? So this is a vector which components are matrices which are 4x4. And I write them in this way, in blocks of 2. So this is 2, 2, 2, 2. And yes, every block is a sigma, is a Pauli matrix. Okay. This this can be expressed in this way. Or also you understand this? I don't know. I mean, it's difficult to me to calibrate the notation. Is a problem always, no? But I think you understand this type of things. From this definition, yeah. This means. How many components have the spinor operator? We have spinor in the direction x, y, and z, right? So this is what I mean here. So we have s x, s y, s z, right? This is just a compact way of writing that these three operators can be written each of them, for instance, I can do it with indices. This can be written as the product of four gamma matrices. So are you interested in S1? You put here gamma 1. You're interested in S2? How this depends on the what do you mean? Sigma. Spinor is half of this big sigma. And then this sigma is defined in this way. Do you know? This is notation. It's just a compact way of writing. Instead of writing three times the same with different indices, I could have written here S1 and then everything for S1 with one here, then S2 with two and then S3. Yes. Okay, this is what I mean. The notation is sometimes misleading, but if you agree, if you understand it, it's very convenient to make things shorter. You know, if there is more talk, how can I get no idea? It's only color stuff. We will use colors. Yes, I was saying that with this, we can check that the spin does not commute with the Hamiltonian, but it gives you this operator gives us the correct commutator. You will know what I mean. So this is okay. Obviously, this beta is related to the gamma 0, and you know that well. And then this So the commutator of the Hamiltonian and the spin gives this term. And we have already canceled, no. Here, we have seen that the commutator of the orbital angular momentum with Hamiltonian is precisely the same with opposite sign. So we got a spin operator that added to the orbital angular momentum commutes with the Hamiltonian. Is it clear? Okay, now. This operator this spin operator also have eigenvalues. Sorry for, I mean, this is mixed German, mixed English, but it's the usual. And the eigenvalues from S squared can be easily obtained because S squared is 1/4 of sigma squared, and you can see that this is 3/4 of 1, 1, 0, 0. Then. So the Dirac equation this is an important, I mean, even before the quantum field theory was very well established as a good theory for computing elementary processes, people understood that the Dirac equation was already a very good equation. Actually, there is a story, someone told me this story. I'm not completely sure, but 90%, 95% sure. That one time Dirac and Feynman met in, I think, in Europe. I don't know when or where. But then they were talking. Feynman was not so brilliantly known, or it was not so famous, because he still didn't prove his famous work, no? But then Dirac said, "Hello, I am Paul Dirac. I have an equation. Do you have an equation?" So people already understood that this was a very important equation. And particularly these people were a bit in competition. You still didn't see anything about fields, quantum fields, right? But you have to realize that this equation is, or will play an important role in the rest of the subject. OK. Another thing that I wanted to to point out is that if we apply the, for instance, let's suppose that we have a momentum, our particle has this momentum. We can always rotate our system to make it like this. No, this is done without loss of generality. So if we apply the S3 operator to psi 1, the one that I wrote here, and this you can prove it easily, no? This will give you, well, this is 1/2 sigma 3, and then you plug this expression here. You will see that this gives +1/2. If you do the same with okay. This is for particles, sir. For antiparticles. Okay, well, this, to prove these four results, I leave it as an exercise to you. But, I mean, you just take these expressions. When you consider particles, you take the u's, the corresponding u, and for antiparticles, you take the v's. And then it's just a little bit of algebra to show this is not a big deal. So everything is consistent, right? So we have a really good equation. Now, as we are sure that this equation is somehow important, we will study some of its properties, okay? We will first talk about Lorentz invariance and how spinors transform under Lorentz transformation. Spinors are the solutions of the Dirac equation. And then we will talk about discrete symmetries, like parity and charge conjugation. You have to realize that in modern physics, modern particle physics, symmetries are everything. You start from symmetries. You construct a theory based on symmetries. The symmetries are a very important thing. Of course, we are not able now to present this subject in a very deep way. We will try to do our best, but the good thing of physics is that you can do many mathematical dirty things. If you keep the physical intuition of what you're doing, you will get correct results. So, okay, I'm not saying that I will do dirty things, but it's not, I mean, from the theoretical viewpoint, you will see in, I don't know if quantum field theory 2 or other lectures, a much better presentation of this subject. So let's start canceling. What can you see better? This? Or this? Or you don't care? Who? In the end? What can you see better, yellow or orange? You don't care? Okay. So? Okay. I take orange if you don't mind. Well, sorry for the yes. One thing I think we agree on is that the Dirac equation is constructed to be a Lorentz invariant thing, right? So we expect that it doesn't matter in what frame we describe the physics, Dirac equation will be still valid in any frame that is related to order with by means of a Lorentz transformation. So we expect that this is one in one frame, and we expect that the results, the physical results, are equivalent if we use another frame in which the equation will have this form. Okay, I will call this one, and this other two. We also know that under a Lorentz transformation, the coordinates transform like this. Right? And then the basic observation of this section we're talking about now is the following. The spinner under a Lorentz transformation should behave in the following way. We define it in the following way. Some object, depending on the transformation itself, multiplying the original spinner, and obviously we can write it do you agree? Our target is to look for a 4x4 matrix, which will be a representation, well, yes, it will be this S of lambda, because these spinners have, they have four components, right? If we take equation 2, then starting from it, we can write the following. Okay, we just took this expression of the spinner and wrote it, relating it to the non-transform spinner. But from equation 1, we can write the following. Okay, because we know that, this is something that we know from relativity. Am I writing correctly? Mm-hmm. Okay. And this is if we multiply this equation by S of lambda, we have then we bring this. And then we put here this is identity. So now we can compare this equation, this last, with these two equations, and we get that under a Lorentz transformation, this is one result that we keep. Now, if we consider infinitesimal Lorentz transformation, we can write lambda in the following way. And as we know from the exercises, these epsilons fulfill, for instance, one property. They are antisymmetric. With this, we can obtain, plugging this transformation here, so this is the expression for an infinitesimal transformation of for the object that transforms the spinor under a Lorentz infinitesimal transformation. Then this is already well known that then we will get a finite transformation of the spinors. And now just a little remark. If we play the same game as we played here with spinors, with the Dirac equation, but instead with the Klein-Gordon equation, we will have something interesting. We will see that Lorentz. we can see it briefly here. For instance, yes, we take this is one equation. And the other would be okay. And both equations, as in the former case, should contain the same physical information, right? From this second equation, we can write the following. So I copied it. This is for due to the properties of the Lorentz transformation, right? Because we have to apply here the one and then the inverse transformation. So we see that the transform spinor and the spinor, I mean, fulfill the same equation. So they will be didn't change under Lorentz transformations. So this is a scalar. Now. Okay, yes. This is all that I was supposed to tell you about spinors today. Spin. Now, we will discuss some discrete symmetries of the Dirac equation. First, we start with parity. We know that parity corresponds to a Lorentz transformation, a particular Lorentz transformation which is very simple. This is 1 minus 1 minus 1 minus 1. On all the rest, zeros. Okay. It's clear, right? So, yes, if we apply this to this is a four vector. I think this is more clear. So if we take the expression that we derive before this particular relationship here, and we use this Lorentz transformation, we see that for nu equals 0, when we do a parity transformation, we have gamma 0 will be equal to plus lambda gamma 0. And for the spatial indices, and then if we apply this particular form, we see that this is a phase that we can choose. So yes, we can fix it to 1 for which is more comfortable. This means that under parity spinor, transforms what time should we finish? 1:45? Or, yes, 11:45, right? Now, we just discussed charge conjugation. How does, how can apply a charge conjugation to a spinor, which is a solution of a Dirac equation? Of course, the effect of charge conjugation is changing particle into an antiparticle, right? Vice versa. And if we look at the expressions that I wrote before for spinors and anti-spinors, for spinors corresponding to particles and spinor corresponding to antiparticles, we see the following. You can transform one into the other by using this combination. In particular, let's be more explicit. If we take U1, okay. This is transformed under charge conjugation. And what I mean is that if we look at the expressions that I wrote at the beginning of the lecture, we realize that we can transform one particle into one antiparticle by means of complex conjugating and applying this operator that they wrote here. If we put this phase equal to I. So, well, in general, we can write that, well, this is the detailed expression of what I said in words. In general, a Dirac spinner under charge conjugation becomes this thing. What can we do to check that this is the correct charge conjugation operation? We could do the following. We will try to apply this operation to a spinner which fulfills the Dirac equation with a magnetic field, right, with some. And then we will see if what is the charge, what is the transform, the charge of the transform object, right? Let me write it. How do we write the Dirac equation for a particle net which is in a electromagnetic field? We do the minimal substitution rule, which means that we identify the canonical momentum. In the case of a normal particle, free particle, this is the mechanical momentum. But in this case, this is not. And then in our case, well, if we have an electromagnetic field, the canonical momentum is something like this, which where I is the vector potential. And then we do this substitution, which is it's the equivalent thing that we did, because this is the momentum that we need to transform. So the Dirac equation can be written now. Okay. What do we expect? We expect that if we transform the spinner with this operation, the transformed spinner should have, if the initial spinner have a charge which is E, the transformed spinner, namely, should have a charge of minus E, right? Let's see it. So the Dirac equation for a particle which has the opposite charge, the Dirac equation for a transformed spinner should be something like this. If we have written the correct charge transformation operator. Okay. But then let's operate with this. This is equal to minus gamma 2. We can put this because this is equal to 1 times this, I put it by hand because I will use it later. Then instead of writing, okay, I take the complex conjugate. So yes, this is complex conjugated, this also. I change the sign here because this is supposed to be real. And then this here. So far, so good. Then I have put this gamma 2 inside, and then I have added a second gamma, I mean, yes, using this. This property, I have put, two gamma here, and one arrives here. But then this is equal to one, and this is equal to minus gamma mu. So this is the original equation, the one that we know that is fulfilled for the particle before the transformation. So, and yes, we have shown that this is a good operator for charge conjugation. In this derivation, I have used also that, well, and which is obvious if you look at the explicit expressions in most, I mean, in, yes, of the gamma matrices. Okay, I think this is a good moment to stop. Are there questions? As I said at the beginning, this is quite technical, but it is important to have faith on what you're talking about now, because if you people tell you about Dirac equation, then you don't know nothing. I mean, you must know what physics talks about the Dirac equation and the symmetries, the symmetry properties of the equation, of the solution of the equation, are very important. So, okay, if you don't have questions, that's all from my side. Thank you.